FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's April 9th, 2018. Fears of a trade war, fears of a hot war in the Middle East, Israel attacking Syria. Oh, before we get into the nitty-gritty, as always, join the show. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com, or leave a message on the hotline, 914-424-4142. So getting back to the news at hand, will there be a trade war? Is there such a thing as a trade war? Currency war? Maybe currency war is part of the trade war. Well, let's find out from Dollar Collapse's John Rubino. John, welcome and happy Monday.
Hey, Kerry. Happy Monday. The whole trade war thing keeps coming and going. You know, the Trump will say something really aggressive, and the stock market will tank. And then one of his guys says something conciliatory, or China says something about negotiating or whatever, and stocks explode. Like today, they're up, I think, 300 and some points on the Dow. And, you know, nothing has really happened yet.
Right.
It's just
exactly.
People talking. But, you know, if you're a stock trader, you have got to be paying for neck massages daily now, because you must be just getting whipsawed.
Hey, if it's just a neck massage, then that's probably okay. Those masters of the universe, you know, I just watch Billions if I really want to know what's happening in the world, because watching a made-up show is just as instructive as watching these memes by the news media. Trade war is a meme to me. It doesn't exist. You can't have a war with trade because it's a zero-sum situation. Winner, loser. It's, you know, they keep hearkening back to the days of Smoot-Hawley, that tariff that made the Great Depression admittedly much worse, or to a degree worse than it would have been otherwise. But this is now, the U.S. is a debtor nation. The U.S. Has had these unequal trading relationships with the rest of the world. Not that the U.S. Indulges in free trade by any stretch, because it doesn't. But let's face it, we subsidize the entire world. For what purpose, I've never quite been able to understand. But that's where the real war is. And that's where we're just going to have to see what happens. I don't know. What's your take on it all?
Well, I think that Trump has campaign promises that he needs to keep. And one of his major promises was to change the terms of trade to be more favorable for the U.S. and for U.S. workers. So he's got to do something. And he's, you know, he's threatening to do stuff. I don't think any of our tariffs have actually been implemented yet. I might be wrong about that, but I think it's all proposals.
Yeah, end of May is when they're threatening to implement them. And, you know, between now and May is a long, end of May is a long time.
So I assume that what the U.S. administration is hoping is that the threats bring China and some of the other countries that we want to renegotiate with to the table, and that we cut a deal, you know, something that isn't horrible for them, but gains us something, you know, and it's probably going to involve other countries agreeing to set up factories in the U.S. so that what they used to be importing here, they're going to make here. And then, because that's tangible, Trump can say 2,000 jobs in Chattanooga, Tennessee, you know, and you know, it's real. That actually works. And that's kind of sort of mercantilist, you know, in the sense that we're trying to make material gains at the expense of other countries, you know, as opposed to, for instance, using currency fluctuations to gain trade value or trade advantages. You know, you cut the value of your currency, your stuff gets cheaper and you sell more of it overseas. Presumably, local companies build new factories and expand existing factories and hire more people. And that's another way to get there. We're doing it via negotiation over factories and related behaviors instead of manipulating currencies. But there's speculation now that China is thinking about retaliating because they can't really win with tariffs because we have a big trade deficit with them, which means we've got a lot more stuff to, to put tariffs on if we want to. They can't do it by selling treasuries because that actually plays into our hand by forcing down the value of the dollar, which helps our trade balance. So what China is considering doing now is devaluing the yuan, which takes us out of, you know, traditional trade policy and brings us over to the currency war scenario. And we would presumably have to respond to that by trying to devalue the dollar in some way. You know, that's a thing that happens every generation, you know, where countries get into a spat in which they're cutting the value of their currency and then their trading partners are responding in kind. And you get a piece of chaos in the currency markets and a big drop in currency values. We might do that too. You know, so we don't know where this is going to go. Yeah. I'm sure that Trump and company hope that it's a negotiated settlement, you know, that they sit down at a table, bluster a bit, you know, play to the press a little bit, and then work something out that that everybody can live with. That would be the best outcome for the global economy for sure. And I think it's the most likely one because it's in nobody's interest to have a trade war or a blatant currency war. You know, everybody wants their currency to be a little weaker in this world, but nobody wants to just go out there and do it, you know, explicitly cut the value of their currency.
Big mistake.
So, yeah. And it's just really bad mistake. PR because it's an admission of failure.
Unintended consequences come with that, too. It affects the country in so many different ways, not to mention it'll be great for Bitcoin and gold when the countries overtly debase their currencies. You know, they always do it covertly. Let's face it. That's what being in government finance is all about, debasing your currency while pretending to strengthen it and making people believe that you want your currency strong when you're really doing the opposite. That's what they do. So my take on it is that, I think the final straw for Trump was when China said they would no longer take our garbage, recycled items, corrugated cardboard boxes, plastic, glass, all of this junk that we recycle. And China, it was the fifth largest export, I believe, of the U.S. to China. And the nerve of them not to take our garbage. I mean, what is the world coming to, John, when you can't dump your garbage on China? And believe me, it was a profitable endeavor for them. It's probably environmental reasons they're doing it, probably political reasons. Maybe they're making enough of their own garbage now and they don't have to import any. You know, they do have a booming economy. I don't know the answer to it, but I do know that was driving cities and states nuts because China was the big buyer of recyclables or garbage, as we call it. So they can't stop taking our garbage because they already stopped taking it or they plan to stop taking it. So I don't know what else they're going to stop. Look what happened with soybeans when they tried to tariff them. Europe stepped up to the plate. And we have to go back. It's not just a question of the deficit, John. It's also a question of intellectual property theft. The Chinese are masters at it. Look, to some extent, every country and every big company does it. But the Chinese have systematized it to a point where it's really a stone around the neck of the U.S. economy and Europe as well. Europe is really behind us on this trade war, and I think that's the biggest reason why China will have to find a face-saving way to somehow make Trump happy. The Europeans are, you know, look, you want to sell them Airbuses? You got to build a factory there where they promptly steal the technology. You know, Trump has stopped Boeing from doing that, and he's embargoed acquisitions of high-tech U.S. companies. We'll see how that turns out in the long run. But there's a lot more than just the deficit at work here.
Yeah, China has been stealing really blatantly and getting away with it. You know, I'm
we let
not
them.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not sure why we let them, though. It doesn't seem like something that's in our interest.
Because we're nice. We want to be nice. We want to be might not be nice. We want to be perceived as being nice. Don't ask the Middle Easterners how they feel about us. But we want to come on as the nice guys that want everybody to prosper. But now the country is bankrupt. We really can't afford to do it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it is true. Well, not that there's a fix for our situation, but it's not a surprise to see us trying to at least fix our trade deficit. Now, there's a theory that the country with the reserve currency from which it gains many benefits has to run a trade deficit because it has to put enough of that reserve currency out into the world to allow everybody else to have enough of it for their own reserves. So we have a structurally embedded trade deficit as long as the dollar is perceived to be the most important currency in the world. But I don't think it has to be as big as it is. Half $1 trillion a year really adds up over time.
Oh, yeah.
And it creates a huge systemic risk. You know, there's what, $15 or $20 trillion outside the borders of the U.S. And just a piece of that could be destabilizing if it flows in the wrong direction. You know, if it all comes back here, that's really inflationary. So so it's not good for us, our situation right now. And China is is clearly the culprit if we're looking for people to blame for our trade imbalances, because they're this huge economy that hasn't been playing by civilized country rules. And they've been, we've cut them a lot of slack because they're a developing country. You know, we want them to progress and become a good citizen and a really powerful player that we can count on. That's the ideal scenario for China. But in the meantime, they are stealing a lot of their stuff. You know, you see these articles about China's next generation fighter planes or their brand new drones or whatever, and they look identical to what the U.S. has been building. And that's not a fluke. That's because they broke into the Pentagon's database and stole the designs for those things and got away with it, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's understandable that we're mad about that. And it's understandable that Trump wants to change things. So this isn't, this isn't a sign of instability on the U.S.'s part.
Or Trump's, for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, this is stuff we should have been doing all along, probably. Yeah. And better late than never, I guess.
Yeah, well, they've been infiltrating the country. You got these Confucius centers on all of these college campuses. Pretty soon it'll be Chinese lives matters. Yeah. I could just see it coming. Asian lives matter. You know, by the way, the Chinese, the Japanese, Koreans do not like being called Asians. They much prefer Orientals, because my friend who is Korean, upper class Korean, told me that they looked at it like, call them Asians, and they could be construed as, you know, Indians or any other number of countries, Middle Easterners, that they really kind of look down on the people. So they prefer Orientals. I don't know, like, where this came about, but it's really not. It's really not a politically correct term. As far as they're concerned, it's politically incorrect. So call them Orientals. They prefer it.
Okay, that's fine with me. I'm happy to call anybody what they want to be called, as long as it's not something that's offensive to me. But it is kind of a moving target. I remember in college learning to call girls women, you know, which was, I get, and it's right and everything. But then later on, I taught my kids to refer to everybody, all females over the age of 18, as women. And then a woman came up to my kid after he called her a woman and said, "Don't call me a woman. That makes me feel old. Call me a girl." You know, and my kid looks at me like, "Thanks, Dad. You know, for teaching me the wrong thing to say out there." And I think that's true of a lot of different parts of our world now, where different people would like to be called things that are different than what they're currently called, you know. And it's up to other people to accommodate everybody, I think. You know, we should show people the respect that they deserve by calling them what they would like to be called. But it is hard to keep track, you know, because it tends to change over time in ways that gets harder and harder to keep up with the older you get.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, now that wacko, I think it was a New York Times guy or New Yorker, New York Magazine, said, let's just use the pronoun they for everybody.
I kind of do that already.
John, it's really... I thought you were a writer. You can't use they properly in your writing, right? I mean, you know, they refers to men, women, trannies, indeterminable sexual orientation. Indeterminate.
Yeah, but he or she is a really clumsy structure, and it still doesn't even work. It doesn't cover everybody, you know?
Yeah.
So they might not be grammatically correct, but it's so much simpler and shorter that I use it anyhow.
I have a better one than that, though. I would use the Joe Pesci article, use is so much better. You know, if it could just get over sounding like an illiterate, use is perfect because you know exactly what you mean. Right? Use and utes for younger ones who use utes. And that's fixes the language perfectly.
This is a funny world, isn't it, Carrie?
Oh, it's getting funnier by the day. Yeah. And hey, in the meantime, like oil's been bouncing around in that 60 to 65 range. Everything's channeling, John. Everything's caught in a really definitive channel, except for Bitcoin. That's crashed. If you look at poor Bitcoin, and remember, we wrote our paper just at the right time, sent it out to thousands of you out there. If you haven't gotten the paper, just email me, kl@carrylutz, put in their Bitcoin white paper. And we kind of nailed a lot of the issues that have come up. And now it's under $7,000 per Bitcoin. I mean, if you're a cryptocurrency person, the world is about to end, right?
Well, it certainly feels like that. You know, the Google search frequency of different terms is a way to tell what's trending and what's hot.
Right.
And Bitcoin totally spiked a year ago.
Uh-huh.
And since then, it's been trending back down. And now the search frequency on Google is back down to where it was before it took off. You know, it's really minuscule in terms of its level of a couple of years ago. And that implies that people lost interest in a hurry, which kind of makes sense because the vast majority of people who bought Bitcoin during its existence bought it in the last year.
Oh, yeah.
And so hammered. The vast majority of Bitcoin players are way underwater right now. Yeah. So it's understandable. Well, there's a lot of disgust.
It's a great time to buy more, John. You know, I have to admit, I haven't even been looking at it that much lately. I haven't looked at it in a few days. It's $6,742 a Bitcoin, and the retracement, you know, the whole Elliott wave, Kondratieff wave thing, it's almost perfect. You know, it's like two thirds, right? It's just a little bit more. Yeah, it's right around, it was at 19.4, so it's down 12.7, which is almost perfect two thirds.
Well, you kind of have to use technical analysis with Bitcoin because you don't really have a price history that you can count on relative to any fundamental thing. You know, you can't look back and go, okay, you know, Bitcoin's intrinsic value was here and now it's here and therefore its price, you know, there's nothing like that with Bitcoin.
No.
There's no objective intrinsic value.
Oh, it's the street. So the street price is the value, you know?
Yeah. So you know, it might go to 100,000, but there isn't an indicator that you can look at now and say, well, you know, relative to its this, then it has to do that. There's nothing like that. So, yeah, you know, technical analysis might capture the emotional content of the trading and give you some clues about what's going to happen. But I don't know. I'm not generally very comfortable with technical analysis. I'd much rather be able to see a price earnings ratio or something like that. You know, I'm way more comfortable with stuff like that.
I love fundamentals, but you know, when you're in insane markets like we're in now, fundamentals don't really help you out that much. Other than to tell you that things are really out of whack, right?
But see, that's a good thing to know. I mean, if you look at Amazon stock or the S&P 500 or something like that, and the signal that fundamental valuation is sending to you is to be cautious.
Yeah.
Which I think is completely reasonable historical. See, we've got historical precedent for stock prices.
Exactly. You're so.
And it's not always perfect, but historically, you know, it's worked over and over again for the past 100 years. So it's reasonable. You at least have something to kind of hang your decision-making hat on with stocks that have a long history. But there's nothing like that with cryptocurrencies yet.
I'll tell you what. You look at that chart, it is so ugly. It is a hideous chart for Bitcoin.
Oh, for Bitcoin, yeah.
It's terrible, and it's a downward sloping. You can't even call it a wedge. It's not really a, well, depends how you cut that.
But you know, Kerry, historically, that's when you want to buy. When it is so ugly that no rational person would commit a penny to that thing.
A descending wedge. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. It's, you know, but you look at it, it is ugly. I mean, it paints a horrible picture. And we knew it was going to happen. We absolutely, I mean, I wrote on December 17th, get out. I know it's going to infinity, but half of infinity should be enough for you, right? Yeah, half of infinity. When is half of infinity not enough? You know, it's just reminds me of this algebra problem one time when there's two companies and they each have an infinite number of salesmen and they're going to have a convention in Shangri-La, and Shangri-La has an infinite number of rooms. How do you get company A's people and company B's people in there? You know, stick it in this infinite number of rooms. There's enough rooms available. And it was such a dumb answer, man. It's like, made me feel really dumb not knowing it. Do you know the answer to that?
No.
You alternate them.
Oh, okay.
You alternate them to infinity. So that's my theory here. It's going to infinity. You should have taken your profits when I told you to. Now you think how much more you could buy right now. I mean, that was my mistake, perhaps, in gold. I never lost any money, but the opportunity cost was enormous in it. So I don't regret it, because that's like an insurance premium. It's worth it. But it was a mistake of the market in any event. So this is really one of those times where you have got to be very focused and clear about what you're doing in all markets, whatever you're buying, because you will get killed otherwise. Because this is such, when you have this volatility and uncertainty, John, the pros just are like vultures. They just will suck all the blood and all the life out of your portfolio.
You know, it's interesting with Bitcoin how what happened to it happened right after futures contracts started trading.
No coinkydink there, boy. Yep. So there's deliberate orchestrated takedown. And, you know, we always talk about the news setting the prices in the markets. The really good cycle guys I know say that the markets determine the news, not the other way around. A lot to be said for that, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Well, I think we'll leave it at that. So we'll be back next Monday. Make sure you check out John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. Sign up for both our newsletters. Contact us. Be part of the show. We had an email that we were supposed to talk about today, John, and I forgot all about it.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll tell you what, we'll save it for next week. But to the person that sent it, and it was long and involved, so we need to spend at least 10, 15 minutes on it. We'll do that first thing next week. Apologies there. So anyways, don't hesitate to write us another email. We'll get to both of them next week, kl@kerrylutz.com, or call the hotline. Leave your comments, 914-424-4142, Twitter feed @KerryLutz, Facebook page For Now, Financial Survival Network. John, we didn't even talk about the biggest story, which is really the upcoming, I guess, regulation and control of social media and internet giants. We have to talk about that next week as well.
Kerry, there's never enough time, is there?
enough time. So, all right, John, we'll catch you next week. Be well.
Catch you then, Kerry. Thanks.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.